We're back on Big Board Sports. We'll get to the Yankees, the Mets, and the Red Sox, and dive into all of that. But I want to get Matt Gage on from Broad Auburn Perth and Siena Colleges. I thought he had a great end of the season with the San Francisco Giants. And Matt joins us here on Big Board Sports on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. Matt,
how are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
Not too bad.
So, are you down to four games too left?
We're down to three. We have an off day today. We're off today and three for Colorado to end it.
Okay. Well, listen, man, I'm looking at what you've done here in your short time with San Francisco. I think last time I talked to you, you weren't sure if what was going to happen. That might have been right around the trading deadline, perhaps, if I recall correctly. But you certainly survived the rest of the season, and it looks like you made an impression. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the biggest thing was taking all the experience that I got this year and trying to apply it next year. That was the big thing of sticking around after the deadline. The Giants believed in me and are able to keep me, and just kind of went through the rest of the year. I've had my ups and I had my downs, but the biggest thing was the experience I gained from this year, because, I mean, this is really the first time that I actually stuck into a bullpen. So
yeah.
There's some things that I need to work on for next year, that's for sure, to kind of get back and be one of a better pitcher, a better version of myself on the mound, that's for sure.
Will you sit down with the front office in, I don't know, a couple of days, another week or so, and will they map it out for you and give you an idea of what they plan for you going into next season, Matt?
Yeah, there's always that possibility, but I've never actually had one of those at the end of the year with a team I've been with, and my track record has kind of shown that I don't go back to that team during spring training. So we'll see what the Giants' plans are. Hopefully I get to sit down with the coaching staff and maybe Buster and Zach, but I also want to just thank them for letting me just kind of get my feet under me and get the experience of being in the big league bullpen for, I think it was like 3 months, 4 months. So that was the biggest takeaway from the year, is just gaining the experience and the knowledge, and especially being around guys like Justin Verlander and guys like that, to see like how they succeed in this game and like kind of pick some things up from them and bring it to me.
So in a lot of ways, Matt, even though you've been at this for a very, very long time and you've grinded through the minor leagues, this is perhaps is it fair to call this a breakthrough season for you?
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, this is the first time I actually got to stick into a big league bullpen. So sometimes you have to look over your shoulder a little bit and see if a GM was coming to get you and getting your release papers ready.
The way you say that, it's like, oh boy, I don't know how you've done it. I always say you're the best story going here in terms of our locals that we follow closely in the majors, because I mean you could have thrown in the towel a long time ago, and yet to your credit you did not, and here you are with a breakthrough season. How many years total again? Remind me how many years total you've been at this.
So this would be year, I would imagine, 12, because I got drafted in 14. So that first, I'd count that first short season. So this would be kind of year 12 of doing this, and I just kind of haven't really stopped and just want to continue to play and keep going.
Wow. Do you feel like you're a good fit in San Francisco moving forward?
Yeah, I think it'd be a good fit. It's definitely a good place to pitch. I mean, not a bad place to live either. It's San Francisco, so the weather's pretty not too bad. It's to me, I actually enjoy it because I don't like being too hot. So the weather warms up here in September, so that was the one thing to get used to. So the last couple of days have been a little warm. So that's about the only difference. But I think it'd be a good chance to come back here. But, you know, it's a business, so we'll see what the offseason holds, and we'll see where the Giants kind of take the direction of the bullpen, and we'll see what Buster and Zach have planned for the team.
Matt, who are a few of your teammates from the pitching staff that have served as kind of role models for you, some guys you can lean on for advice to help make you better here in your career?
I mean, the biggest thing is just seeing all the experience throughout the clubhouse. I mean, I didn't really talk to JV a lot. I picked his brain a little bit, but it's just more watching and seeing what he does and to do things to get ready, to prepare, to get the body going. I mean, pitching at the big level and having a lot of success like he did this year, especially after the front part of the year that he had, just kind of making some changes, doing a little bit of different things to revamp his end of his season and keep going. So, like, watching him was the big thing. But, I mean, we had experience all throughout. We have Robbie and Webby. Webby I got drafted with, so seeing him, how he's been successful and stuff like that. And then we had some guys come in from other teams that have kind of had a little bit of my story as well and bounced around and kind of see what helped them kind of stick as well throughout and keep bouncing around from team to team. So, I mean, it's a really collection of just talking to everyone and just kind of getting their feedback and stuff like that because it's a long season. I mean, I got to get my body prepared to throw 70, 80 innings out of a bullpen. I've never done that in my life, so it was a little eye-opening to do that as well this year. So, picking up on a little bit of everything from different guys at the clubhouse, that's for sure.
Tom and Matt Gage, Brad Alban, Perth grad, Siena grad, and with the San Francisco Giants. And really, I look at your numbers, and I mean, are you pleased with your number? I mean, you pitched in 20. Will you pitch at all before any of these final three games, do you think, Matt?
I hope so. Okay. I didn't get to pitch in Colorado versus them because they think they only had two lefties. Out of their 14 hitters when we were there, but then we were going to St. Louis in the playoff push. So I think that it just didn't come up that I get a chance to pitch in Colorado. And then I threw in St. Louis. So having St. Louis this time first, I threw twice already during the series for St. Louis. So we'll see what Bob and the guys had planned. We're still trying to win these games, that's for sure. I got the pitch last night in the eighth inning, and I got my three hitters and gave up a single and a double and got taken out. And so that's just kind of the way the game is. We're still playing games to win. I mean, it's still a winning clubhouse. That's what the feel is. We're going to go out and try to win every day. So, again, beating these experiences of throwing the eighth inning and only getting three hitters because of the new rules and stuff like that is a little bit different than what I'm used to. So, because like I've always been the guy that sits in the bullpen for seven days, doesn't pitch, but hey, it's we're winning by seven or we're down by seven. Go finish the game for us, type thing. So getting into one-run games, tie games, stuff like that, later in games, has definitely been the experience that I've needed.
Yeah, for sure. And they're showing some confidence in you to put you in there. But, I mean, I got you down for like 27 games pitched this year. And prior to that, I mean, you pitched six games in Detroit and five in Houston and you had 11 game GPs in with Toronto, but 27 this year. That's a high number for you. It's great. And I have you down for 24 strikeouts, 10 walks. I mean, are you fairly happy with the numbers? I mean, those numbers, when somebody else looks at your numbers, say, you know what, that's a pretty good job by Matt Gage.
Yeah, there's some things there that I'm happy with and pleased with, that's for sure. But there's always things to improve. That's one thing. And that's where I kind of said at the beginning, where like, that's where this experience has kind of taken me to be something different a little bit next year, like kind of how I game plan a little bit more, get my body right. Like I said, throwing 67 innings out of a big league bullpen is different, that's for sure. So the body is a little bit worn down toward the end of the year. So, I mean, because even those games that I didn't pitch in, most of the time I was up moving around in the bullpen. A lot of those games, I really never told the pitching staff or Bob that I needed a down day, I needed a day off. So I was getting available. I was up a lot. There was one game in Arizona this past week that I got out three to four times in the bullpen and I didn't get in the game. So having the body ready to do that as well is definitely something that I need to improve on. So it's just kind of one of those things, is get back to the drawing board and try to be a little bit better next year even so.
Well, listen, I think everyone around here is proud of what you have accomplished this year with San Francisco, and you're getting love here in the 518, which you should. And I'll let you go, but I want to throw this at you. I did read, and I'm assuming it's accurate, October the 4th, it looks like you're going to be home on a Saturday, and you're doing something from noon to 4 for family or friends or anybody who wants to come out. Can you give me some details on that? Is that true?
Yeah, so with Parkhurst, Little League, and Gloversville, I try to get home as much as possible. And a lot of times it happens in December when I come home for Christmas. And, you know, one year we got a little bit tied down with snow, and we had like a kind of a snowstorm. And I know a lot of people didn't want to kind of drive through that, and which is understandable. So unfortunately, not making the playoffs, I was able to kind of hook something up where I can get home like, as soon as the season's over, and you know, not have to worry about the snow or anything. So I actually talked to my dad, and he went to the Girls of Little League, and we set something up. So I'm also going to school in Amsterdam, kind of Hegeman Telser, on Friday to talk to the elementary school there, students there for an hour as well. So I'm just trying to come back home and do some things around the community that I haven't been able to do in the past.
That's great.
So and then on October 4th, I think it's at the Hall of Fame across the street from the Governor's Little League. I'll be there for a couple hours. I think there's some autograph signing. There's going to have a Q&A. And just kind of see people in the community and try to give back a little bit more than I have in the past.
That's great. Well, we'll send up a camera from WNYT and get an interview and take some video and get you on the local news on that night. So October 4th, that's open to anybody, right? Anybody that wants to go to the baseball museum, as you said, in Gloversville, from I think I had you down from like noon to 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon on that Saturday, October 4th, which is next Saturday.
Yes, yeah, all is welcome, and I really appreciate everyone who comes out and shows some support. And if they want an autograph, they can have an autograph. If they just want to say hi, they can say hi. It's free. It's free, and it doesn't cost you anything.
Fair enough, Matt. Always a pleasure. I think your story is a great one, and you've been awesome and hanging in there. And I think it paid big dividends for you this year in San Francisco. Hope you get in the final couple of games of the season, and we'll see you back in your hometown here next weekend.
Sounds good. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Matt. Matt Gage with the San Francisco Giants. Good stuff. Higher, hitting 50 and 51. He's not the MVP though. I will say that.
Don't go down that road.
I will tell you right now, I will bet my mortgage that Kyle Raleigh is going to be the MVP.
You
can't put up the numbers that Kyle Raleigh is putting up. He's a catcher. He's a switch hitter. What he's doing for this one season is off the charts. He's got to be your MVP. Judge has done this before.
Judge leads in almost every offensive statistical.
He leads in almost every offensive statistical category.
You
are biased, and you've got blinders on.
No, you hate the Yankees. No. So you're going Kyle Raleigh.
I'm telling you, when the vote comes out and Kyle Raleigh wins it, don't be surprised.
He needed, like Bob Nightingale said, he needs to hit like 64, 65.
The dude is incredible.
He's incredible. I'm not taking anything away. Away from him,
and he's a catcher. What he's doing is unprecedented.
I am not poo-pooing what he's doing.
He's a switch hitter.
He is. Judge is the MVP. He's hitting .328.
Not.
He also is not trailing Kyle Raleigh by that many home runs, and he leads in all but like two categories.
I'm telling you that the MVP will be Kyle Raleigh.
I think it'll be Judge. That's where we agree to disagree.
Yeah.
I mean, Raleigh, outside of any other year, I think is a deserving MVP, and he's been incredible.
No, here's why Raleigh gets the MVP, because this doesn't happen every year to a guy like Kyle Raleigh, who's a catcher and a switch hitter. This happens more often than not to a guy like Aaron Judge, who has, I think this is the fourth time in his career that he's hit over 50 home runs.
Right.
He's had better seasons than the one he's having right now. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So that he's not this year's MVP, the guy this year that deserves the MVP is Kyle Raleigh.
I mean, like Bob Nightingale said, though, Judge is the you look at the most valuable player to their team. It's Judge. I mean, you could say the same for Kyle Raleigh this year, but Seattle's got some other dudes that are really good.
It's 1 year that Kyle Raleigh, as a catcher and a switch hitter, being able to put up these numbers is absolutely off the charts. This 1 year, you got to give it to Kyle Raleigh. Maybe he doesn't win it. If I had a vote this year, it would go to Kyle Raleigh.
I think Judge is still the betting favorite. I think it's closer, but I think it's still Judge leading the way.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I don't know. And here's John Bam Bam Mueller. Raleigh, no discussion. playing most difficult.
Bam Bam doesn't like the Yankees either.
Well, I'm just saying. Not everyone who doesn't like, you think that's my opinion because I don't like the Yankees. That's not true.
I think there is bias because a lot of people don't like the Yankees.
There might be some of that, but you've got to look at what Raleigh is doing here.
I'm not taking anything away. Raleigh's been incredible.
Let's get to Pete Doherty. Let's crank up the NFL music and roll from there as we crank up week 40 NFL. Good morning, Mr. Doherty. How are you?
Good morning, Roger. I know you're running behind, so we'll just skip over the standings since you went over those Tuesday in pretty big detail. Aaron Judge is the MVP because you can't give it to someone who's batting .248.
Thank you, Pete.
Do you need to know that doesn't involve the NFL?
Thank you, Pete. So you're with MJ. You think the MVP is Aaron
Judge.
I'm
with the majority of people.
Seriously, I think the point, if he breaks Judge's home run record, I think Raleigh's going to get it. But I do think the Judge is right now the slight betting favorite over Raleigh. So we'll
see how it plays out. When does that vote come out? I don't even know.
It's the end of the regular
November.
Season, I think.
Okay, so yeah. right around the corner.
They vote like Sunday night or Monday morning, and then they seal the votes. And then they after the World Series, about a week or two after the World Series, a day at a time, they'll start announcing those awards just to give us a little bit of baseball in November when our heads are buried in football, as they kind of are right now.
Yeah, for sure. All right, you got my picks in front of you. You sent me my picks, right?
Yes, I did.
All right. I got them. Here we go. I got them. Let's roll through week four. By the way, I do have a slim lead atop the standings, right?
I heard something about that on Tuesday. I don't remember now.
It's a long year. We'll see how it plays out. All right. It starts tonight. Seattle at Arizona. Seattle minus -2.5. I've got Arizona taking care of business at home tonight. Give me Arizona at home minus -2.5.
It's actually Arizona. You're getting 2.5. Seattle's actually favored in that game.
Yeah, I'm going to home team.
Yeah, as I and most of the panel took Arizona, it's surprising a little bit, but Arizona at home, I tend to like home teams on Thursday nights, and I think Arizona has probably shown a little bit more in Seattle last week, notwithstanding. So I 6 out of 8 take Arizona, and I'm one of the 6.
There you go. All right. Here we dive into Sunday, now week 4, and this is going to surprise you. In Dublin, at Dublin, Minnesota, minus -2.5 against the Steelers. I'm taking the Vikings in this game. Now you know how serious I am as trying to hold on to my lead atop the standings.
You know, I was typing these up on our form, and I had to go back and look. I said, no, Roger didn't take Minnesota, did he?
I did.
And sure enough, he took Minnesota.
Yeah.
And I'm taking Minnesota, too. If you saw the game Sunday, Pittsburgh at New England, New England should have won that game. They turned the ball over 5 times. That's Pittsburgh still has not come up big on defense yet, and I don't know where the defense is, but I don't expect it to emerge Sunday in Dublin, so let's go with the Vikings.
Yeah, I'm going Vikings. All right, let's rattle off a couple in a row here. The Chargers minus -6.5 at the Giants. The Chargers are winning this game. The question is by how much. I want to say Jack's dart will make a difference, and this will be closer than 6.5. I think the Giants will hang around and make it interesting. And then Tennessee plus +6.5 at Houston. I have Houston playing well and winning. They are long overdue here to get a win on this season.
I have the Chargers and Houston as well. I have the Chargers covering right now. I wish it was 7.5. I'd be more tempted to take the Giants, but we'll see. The Houston, I'm taking Houston, but I think Tennessee might cover that game just because I think the Texans are a mess right now, 0-3, and a horrible offensive line. I heard someone say the other day, 9 out of their 11 offensive starters are below the NFL average of their positions. So you just kind of wonder what's going on in Houston, but they got to beat Tennessee, don't they? I would think so. A pair of 0-3 teams. I do have the Texans winning.
All right, I got Washington winning at Atlanta. It's Washington minus -2.5, and I got Buffalo just rolling big time. The line is plus +15.5. Give me the Bills all day long. I think they're gonna have a blowout victory in Buffalo. So Washington on the road, Buffalo at home for me.
Yeah, I agree with both those. Get a little reluctant on Buffalo, that big 15.5 point spread. You could see the Bills getting up by 21 and then a backdoor cover by the Saints. The Bills put some of their subs in, and the Saints get a late touchdown to get within 14. That's the danger of those big spreads. But I like Buffalo to put things together against, and they generally do well against NFC team, so I'll take the Bills and give that big point spread.
All right, fly Eagles, fly. Let's get Saquon rolling this weekend in Tampa. They haven't gotten him unleashed yet, but Philadelphia minus -3.5. I'll take the Eagles to win on the road in Tampa, and then Cleveland plus +8.5 at Detroit. Lions all day long.
Yeah, I like Philly to win. That's a heck of an early season matchup, though, Philly at Tampa Bay. I do like the Eagles. I think they're just better across the board. Certainly Detroit's going to win that game against Cleveland, but the Browns' defense is really a pretty good defense, and I think maybe their offense shows something because the Lions have certainly shown that they can give up points too. So I like the Lions, but I'm going to take the 8.5 points of the Browns.
Okay. Next up, we'll double dip here. Carolina plus 5.5, Pete, on the road at New England. I'm going Patriots here. Give me New England to get a victory. They really should have beaten Pittsburgh last week, did not. And then Jacksonville plus 3.5 at San Francisco. I think Purdy's back at quarterback this week for the 49ers. I've got San Francisco at home.
Yeah, I certainly like New England at home. I think the Patriots are playing better than their 1-2 record, so I'll give the 5.5. I was surprised the spread's only 3.5, Jacksonville, San Francisco, even though Purdy's back, though. They've got some receivers that might be out, the 49ers, so that's probably influencing the line. I'm going to give the 3.5 right now and take the 49ers and figure they're going to stay unbeaten.
All right, Indianapolis, Daniel Jones, what a season he's having, but I think it comes crashing down this week against the LA Rams coming off the loss to Philly. I think the Rams are going to roll in this one. Indianapolis plus 3.5. I like the Rams. And then maybe the game of the day, so important for both teams, Baltimore at Kansas City. I've got Baltimore plus 2.5. I like the Ravens here to win on the road at Arrowhead.
You know, I was late to the Indianapolis bandwagon, but this is not the week to hop on it. They've messed me up all year, and I certainly think they could beat the Rams, and I'm not going to pick it that way. I'll take the Rams minus 3.5. The Baltimore-Kansas City game probably would have been more interesting if Baltimore had won Monday night. I just think they're going to they bounced off the loss to Buffalo pretty well. I think the Ravens bounce back, and hard to believe the Chiefs are going to be 1-3, but the Chiefs will get better as the season goes along.
All right, Chicago at Vegas. I think a lot of people are going to go Bears here because of what happened last week, but it was against Dallas. And remember, Caleb Williams looked really good. So did Russell Wilson look really good against the Dallas Cowboys. So I'm going to say he's not going to look as good this week. Chicago plus 1.5 at Vegas. I've got Vegas in this game. And then Green Bay at Dallas. I don't know why I even picked the Dallas Cowboys to hang around in this game. But Green Bay is winning. I did take Dallas to make things interesting in the Sunday nighter. But the more I think about it, the more I might text you later and change that, because I woke up this morning and said, I think the Cowboys are going to lose by 3 touchdowns. And I'm picking the Cowboys here to cover the 6.5. But Green Bay, I think we both agree, is going to win that game.
Yeah, let me do Chicago, Las Vegas first. That's an interesting line. I think Las Vegas is going to win too. Some people might be surprised the Bears are an underdog in that game off their last performance. Like you said, it was against the Cowboys defense. It's been pretty bad. So I like Las Vegas in that game playing at home. Yeah, I think Green Bay is going to roll. We can take that asterisk off there at some point if you need to. A 6.5 point spread, I think the Packers can cover that. And NBC will be, they'll be hyping the heck out of the return of I'm just drawing a blank on his name now.
Micah Parsons, yeah.
Not Micah Parsons, Mike Penn Stater. On Parsons' return, but I think in the second half that's going to be a blowout.
Yep, I do, and we haven't even mentioned this week on this show. The Cowboys don't have CeeDee Lamb. They don't have CeeDee Lamb. He's out for 3 to 4 weeks.
They're going to get destroyed.
They're going to get destroyed. And if you go look at the injury report, they've got key players out up and down that roster.
They stand no chance of winning
that football. They have no chance to win that game on Sunday night. Absolutely none. And if you're a survivor pool guy, that is easy one to take.
Well, it should have been last week, but Green Bay couldn't beat the Browns.
Yeah, so. I hear you. And that's another reason that Dallas is in trouble, is that Green Bay lost to Cleveland, and now they're coming to Dallas. All right, I like the Jets on Monday night, Pete, to get their first win of the year. They're going to go to Miami, plus 2.5, Jets plus 2.5. And then I like Denver in the other Monday night game. I mean, Cincinnati's going to be in for a long year without Joe Burrow. Cincinnati plus 7.5. I like the Broncos at home.
Yeah, let me just back up for a second. Survivor pools, you know, this is my golden rule on survivor pools. Don't take a road team, even though Green Bay is a sizable favorite there. Green Bay got burned last week. A lot of people dropped out because of Green Bay last week. So just be careful there. I'm glad we have two Monday night games because I can't imagine staying on the Jets in Miami more than maybe an hour until the kickoff of the Cincinnati-Denver game. I like Miami in that game, but just playing at home and coming off a pretty good performance against Buffalo, even though the Dolphins lost that game. I think the Jets fought 0-4. I do agree on Denver, and I think the Broncos could roll. The Broncos are 1-2 and should be better, and I would think they will get it unleashed against the injury-riddled Bengals. So
all right, and then Pete, that wraps up the week four. All those picks will appear in the Sunday edition of the Times Union. And then what a college football weekend, Pete Doherty. And you and I both are Penn Staters, and you got Penn State, Oregon on Saturday night at a whiteout at Beaver Stadium. We are, man. That's got to be a Nittany Lion victory.
I would certainly hope so. I'm a little bit nervous about the game just because Penn State hasn't played anybody, but then again, neither is Oregon. 3.5-point spread there, so it should be a close game. It should be a great atmosphere, and unfortunately, I can't see it because I'll be at a high school reunion. I think I'll be watching my phone a lot just to keep tabs on that. I don't know who schedules these reunions. I should have told them, hey, just keep it out of football season.
Yeah.
They didn't do it.
Yeah, good boy. Good luck with that. MJ will be driving at a high rate of speed coming back from New Hampshire on Saturday night after the UAlbany football game, and yeah. I hope to get home in the 8 o'clock hour. Drop off the rental car, and then I'm locked in because at the same time you've got Alabama at Georgia, also a 7:30 kick. A great night for college football on NBC and ABC. Pete Doherty, thank you so much, my friend. Good luck with your picks this weekend.
All right, good luck with you. Talk to you next week.
Thank you. Thanks, Pete. Pete Doherty with us here on Big Board Sports. Hey, big news. Capital Region is rolling out the first ever transit link between downtown Glens Falls and downtown Saratoga Springs. Summer connections into the fall now just got easier, and now more than ever, CDTA is here to get you there. Are the New York Mets getting to the playoffs? Well, they still have a game lead on the Cincinnati Reds for the final wild card spot, along with the Arizona Diamondbacks, and thank you to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Mike Puma, good afternoon. Not yet. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
I'm good, man.
Thanks,
I'm
Mike.
Good.
Appreciate
and
coming on.
And Mike has been covering the New York Mets for a very, very long time. He does a great job with the New York Post. I don't know where to begin other than Jonah Tong did not have it last night, but you get bailed out. The Mets get bailed out again by the Pittsburgh Pirates winning again in Cincinnati.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing everything that kind of transpired last night because you had both games that went extra innings. Then you had the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers later on. The Diamondbacks are right on the Mets' heels, too, along with the Reds, and both of those teams actually have the tiebreaker against the Mets right now. So it's pretty crazy. And, listen, the Mets have to win tonight and then have to go down to Miami and think of win at least two out of three down there. I mean, if you can't win two out of three in this series and two out of three in Miami, you don't deserve it. At this point, you can make the case nobody deserves it maybe, but it's just I don't know if I would call it a wild finish here, but it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, who does deserve it? No one's playing great baseball right now. And the Mets haven't been playing good baseball for how many months in a row, Mike?
Yeah, you go back to the middle of June is when the downfall started here. And there's been some spurts where they looked like they were going to turn it around, but it hasn't happened. And right now it's just a struggle to find arms that can get enough outs. And fortunately for the Mets tonight, they have Nolan McClain going, who's turned into the de facto ace of the staff, and he's been very good. But other than that, there's not a lot to be excited about with this Mets pitching right now.
No, I mean, you look at Peterson in game one, no good. Jonah Tong last night doesn't get through, the third inning? I mean, the starting pitching of the Mets is in shambles, Mike.
Yeah, and you look at beyond tonight, it'd be Brandon Sproat opening the Miami series, and then Saturday I would imagine would be some kind of combination of Sean Manaea and Clay Holmes, and the Mets were so strapped in the bullpen they had to use both of them for an inning last night. So that's not a great situation, and then if you get to Sunday, I guess it's back to Peterson, who has not pitched well at all now for almost 2 months.
Yeah, and I don't know when you give up on him. And will we see Kodai Senga? Probably not, right? He hasn't pitched well in AAA.
It doesn't sound great for Senga. And he faced some hitters a couple of days ago down in Port St. Lucie. Not pleased with his velocity right now. It doesn't sound like he'll be in the mix here for these last few games, and if that's the case, it's hard to imagine if the Mets do get to the playoffs that he'll be in any kind of position to help the team.
Talking with Mike Puma from the New York Post, been covering the New York Mets at a high level for a long time, joins us here on Big Board Sports on 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio. Mike McClain gets the ball tonight against Imanaga, another good pitching matchup to finish off the series at Wrigley Field in game number three. Assuming the Mets, if they do get in and they're the third wild card, is it safe to say Nolan McClain, in your opinion, Mike, could be and should be the game one starter for the Mets if they make it to the wild card series next week?
Well, he's certainly their top guy. The only question is if, you know, and we saw this a few years ago where the Mets held Jacob DeGrom till game two with the idea of, okay, if we have our best pitcher go game two, then it's a situation where he's, you know, potentially staving off elimination or clinching. So, you know, that's one thing to look at. But, yeah, McClain's definitely the guy. They're going to build this thing around just based on the way he's pitched. He's been great, you know, seven starts pitching to a, what is it, 1.27 ERA, I believe it is. So, yeah. He's the guy you're going to formulate this rotation around, whether it's game one or game two of a wild card series.
Who takes the fall if they either don't make the playoffs altogether or it's an early exit?
Yeah, and that's interesting. If you know, David, you know, I don't think David Stearns is going anywhere this soon. So I you know, I don't. But as far as the manager, Carlos Mendoza. Now, listen, Stearns has said he's liked the job Mendoza's doing and all that. But it'll be interesting to see if the Mets don't reach the postseason here. What direction they go with the manager is certainly be some question there. And, you know, the coaching staff, I would think will be open to potentially an overhaul, whether it's pitching coach, hitting coach, all the way down the line here. So there's a lot at stake for the Mets these next few days.
What's your gut tell you about McClain tonight? Does he pitch well and lead the Mets to a much-needed win here?
You would think so, but at the same time, sometimes you look at the odds and the fact that McClain hasn't had a bad game yet, and you say to yourself, wow, this guy's been so good that you know there's going to be a clunker at some point, and if you're the Mets, you hope it's not tonight, you know, and the ball's been jumping the first two games of this series, so, but listen, if you're the Mets, you like the fact you have the guy who's emerged as your best pitcher going tonight with a chance to win the series.
All right, Mike, we'll see how it plays out. Certainly some drama here for baseball fans in the final four games of the regular season. Keep up the great work with the New York Post, and thank you for joining us on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, guys, thanks for having me.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. All right, Sean McAdam joins us, Boston Red Sox beat writer, covering the team all year long, masslive.com, and we appreciate his insight into Boston throughout the course of this entire season. Sean's been on our platform many times, and Sean, we really appreciate that, and it's almost time for the postseason. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
We're good.
We're good.
We are
Thanks,
good,
Sean.
Sir. We are good, and you know, the Yankees are actually thanking the Boston Red Sox right now, my friend.
Yeah, you don't see that happen very often, but the Red Sox have helped out the Yankees by taking the first two from Toronto and creating a first-place tie in the AL East with four games to go. It's been a fun September with lots of tight races and stuff still to be determined.
Would you say Boston now starting to play pretty good baseball? They've knocked off the Blue Jays. Do you like what you're seeing from the Red Sox right now, and do you think they're going to get there?
Yeah, I don't see how they can't get there at this point. Their magic number is now down to one.
Yeah.
If they get a Houston loss later this afternoon in Sacramento, the Red Sox will have clinched a playoff spot even before their final game in Toronto tonight. So, you know, they would have to lose out and have Houston run the table here to not make the playoffs at this point. I don't think that's going to happen. It's been a good road trip for the Red Sox. They are currently 4-1 in the five games they played in Tampa and Toronto. Strong showing from Crochet last night. So, the hope is that they kind of are firing on all cylinders at the exact right time as the season winds down and the postseason kicks off Tuesday.
Sean, when they clinch, will they have a big celebration on the field and then pop champagne in the clubhouse like they just won the World Series?
Probably not on the field, particularly because they're on the road, assuming that happens tonight. And it's possible, as I said, that they may be in before the first pitch is thrown, in which case it always gets a little awkward there because you don't celebrate before your game. And what happens if you lose the game that you're playing, but it's your first chance to celebrate getting in? Who knows how they'll handle that. But, it's been 4 years since the Red Sox have been back to the postseason. You have to go back to 2021 for their last playoff appearance. So I'm sure there'll be some celebration, whether it's subdued or what the timing is, we'll have to see. But, look, it's a long season, 6+ months, 158 or so games so far, and when you get there, usually teams don't mind having a good time to celebrate all the hard work that they've done throughout the season.
Sean, you look at this Red Sox pitching staff, how confident are you, how confident should Red Sox fans be, if they're in the wild card series, which it looks like all signs are pointing towards that they are going to be here next week, how confident should they be in this pitching staff with you got Crochet off the top and you've had a overall starting pitching group, Sean, that's been really solid here down the stretch? You'd have to like their chances in a three-game series.
Yeah, I think so. I think it'll be interesting to see what they get out of Bayo tonight.
Yeah,
he has had some issues in three of his last four starts. He's given up multiple runs in either the first or second inning that has kind of dug a hole for his team. You certainly would like to see that pattern stopped before the games of great consequence begin next week. But in general, that's a decent front three and a short series of Crochet, Giolito, and Bayo. And then when you look at the back end where you have Chapman as the closer and Whitlock as a real shutdown eighth inning setup guy, he's allowed one run in his last 20 appearances. I've always believed that the postseason, particularly in the shorter series at the beginning, the best of three wild card and the best of five division series, kind of favors teams that are a little top heavy, where you have two or three really dominant starters and a couple of dependable back-end guys in the bullpen. You don't have to worry so much about depth until later in the postseason. And even when you get there, there are enough built-in off days that you can really lean on your big guys. So I think the Red Sox are feeling pretty good about where they sit from a pitching standpoint.
Who's the MVP of MLB, Cal Raleigh or Aaron Judge?
Well, your listeners or the majority of them might not like this, but I do not have an MVP vote this year. I have a Rookie of the Year vote, but I think if I had an MVP vote, I would go with Raleigh. And I understand the great season the Judge has had. There's no taking away from that. He's first in virtually every offensive category, be it OPS, slugging, on-base percentage. It is 50th and 51st last night. So there's no denying the kind of year he's had. But to me, when you look at a catcher with 60 home runs and what he's contributed behind the plate, his defensive contributions, his game calling, all the things that go into being a major league catcher in 2025, and then add in a 60 home run season, then I think I would be leaning toward Raleigh, although it's a tough call because, you're passing up a guy who has had another monumental season in Judge. I just think this is a remarkable year by Raleigh. And when you talk about actual value to a team, I understand how important Judge is to the Yankees, but I would say that maybe Raleigh is even a little more important to the Mariners' success.
Fair enough, Sean. Always a pleasure getting your insight here on ESPN Radio in Albany, and we'll see how the postseason shakes out. But I think the Red Sox are a kind of a dangerous, sneaky little team when they get into the postseason. I think they could surprise a few people along the way.
Yeah, I think it's a wide-open field. You've got a couple of teams like Detroit and Toronto kind of staggering toward the finish line. We're probably going to have the top seed and the bottom seed may be only separated by 5 or 6 games in the win column. So it does really look like an open situation where whoever gets hot could go on a long run here in October.
Sean, thank you so much, my friend. Enjoy the postseason. We'll talk to you probably sooner than later.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks.
Take care.
Thank you, Sean.
All right. That's Sean McAdam.